Besides this one, I have another podcast called Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com that tells you how to navigate the difficult relationship. What makes a relationship difficult? Oh, I don't know, when you catch them in lies, when you're always looking to please someone who can't be pleased, when disagreeing with them becomes a nightmare, when you're confused more often than not, when you feel guilty. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hey, this is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you learn to deal with difficult people and tackle life's challenges without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. You know, speaking of difficult relationships, which I do almost every single episode, I'm going to talk about one that is a little different because it's somebody else's relationship. Somebody wrote to me and said, the wife of somebody I know is a clear narcissist with sociopathic behavior. The husband is the victim of her abuse, and I am the guy stuck in the middle who doesn't want to play any of her games. The husband refuses to confront the situation, and she refuses to acknowledge it. We have a long history of friends, and then briefly as lovers, until all of this came to light. I'm not sure what that means, if two of them or all three of them. I'm not going to address that. Not right now, or maybe in my answer I will, but I work with his brother and other family members, and I am a part of the community, and they live together off and on. Okay, so there's some things going on in this relationship that's not necessarily the most common. I'll put it that way. He said she has caused so much damage in his life, and he refuses to acknowledge it. How do I make it clear that I have no interest in her games, but will maintain my relationship with him and his family? Here's a short list of her behaviors. High level of manipulation. She retells stories over and over again that aren't true, but they fit her narrative. She has bully behavior toward her husband, but makes herself the victim. Gaslighting. Poisons his friendships if she feels they encroach on her property, i.e. him. Throws tantrums when the spotlight is not on her. Secludes him from family and friends. Has told me lies about people to drive wedges between us and keeps me closer to her. Self-sabotage to garner empathy. Uses social media to create a false self. And I'm sure he had a thousand other things to say, but that's where it ends because of the character limitation. And coincidentally, we are talking about a character limitation in the sense that we have somebody that may be a narcissist, maybe sociopathic, maybe a number of things, but we know that this person who wrote doesn't want to deal with her behaviors anymore, and also sounds like he wants to get the message through to his friend, her husband, and there's something else going on in the relationship. They were lovers. I don't even know what that means. Were they all lovers? Was it a polyamorous situation? Really, what it comes down to is right now I look at the bottom line, which is you have two people in a relationship, whether they live together or not. He said they live together off and on. And whether they were formally together or this person was together with that person or both people, doesn't matter. Because right now, what do we have? We have a friend of two people in a relationship, and he is dealing with one side and the other side. Now, he is dealing with the person who is manipulative and sounds like controlling and gaslighting and all this other stuff. And then he has the other side of this, his friend that won't acknowledge everything going on. So where I go with this is when you have two adults in a relationship making adult decisions to be with each other, whether they're in denial, whether they're controlling, whether they're in a very toxic situation and they know it or they don't know it or whatever it is, it's very difficult as another adult to come into the picture and say, hey, this is what's happening in your relationship. Be very aware of it and do the following to change. Now, I'm not saying he said this, but it is very difficult for two adults to hear another adult tell them how to live their lives, tell them what to look for, tell them the warning signs that they see or not only the red flags, but the obvious manipulation and gaslighting and all that. It's very difficult for two adults to hear that when they are in a closed system where they feed off each other. And I'm not saying that the victim in this case is feeding off of them. I'm just saying that the victim in this case has decided that he's going to stay in this situation. Whether he's in denial or doesn't know it's happening, but he's still an adult and he's still making these adult decisions. And I got to be very careful because I don't want to make the victim feel like they're the problem or that they are causing this to themselves. That's not it at all. I'm saying when you break it down, you have three adults in a situation and the two people in the relationship are making a decision to be with each other. Now, that doesn't mean that the husband doesn't feel like they're locked in, doesn't feel like they're trapped. That could be. But if that were the case, then he would probably acknowledge that something's going on. Like, I can't get out of this because she's so manipulative, or I'm afraid of her. That happens too. I'm afraid of this person, so I can't get out of this situation. Or if I leave, you know, XYZ will happen. So it's possible the husband feels that way. But from what this person shared, the husband's not even acknowledging it and is just going with the flow of whatever's happening. It could mean the husband gets something from the relationship. I don't know what that would be because it sounds like, I mean, when you have a narcissist, they usually treat the victim of their narcissism as their supply for their energy, for their joyful recreation of whatever they want to do. The narcissist will use somebody and drain them. And that person who's being drained has to find another energy source, meaning they have to continue working on themselves and uplifting themselves because the narcissist doesn't do it at all. The narcissist isn't there to give somebody like that any self-worth, meaning the person being victimized won't feel worthy. They won't feel respected. And so they have to get that from within or seek it elsewhere. But, you know, all of this stuff should come from within, but usually the victim of behavior like this, it gets drained. That stuff gets drained. And because of that, the victim often turns to the narcissist to replenish themselves. And the narcissist or any manipulative person knows how to give them enough to replenish to then become the supplier of that energy that they're looking for. I mean, that's what a narcissist does. They look for their supply. They look to feed off of somebody and drain somebody. But then they feed back. They give back just enough so that they become the supply again. And that draining process is part of the abuse cycle and the up and down of a relationship like that, because somebody who feels drained wants to feel replenished, wants to feel lovable and worthy. And when they are with somebody who takes all of that away and then gives it back, a trauma bond is formed. And that trauma bond causes somebody to stay with somebody like that because it becomes like a drug. You take it away, you give it back, you take it away, you give it back. And that person, they just can't get enough. They're always trying to get more and they can't get enough. And so that could be happening. That's kind of the sidestep I took there. There could be a trauma bond that he doesn't want to break or know how to break or doesn't know how to get out of. There could be a number of reasons why he can't leave, he won't leave. And I feel bad. I feel sorry for this person, the person who is suffering from this. Because if you've never been in a trauma bond, you don't realize how difficult it is to get out of it. That usually happens because there's something missing in you or something lacking in you that you get from the person hurting you. And when that happens, you become more reliant on that person. Even though they're hurting you or abusing you, you continue to get your needs met from them. And that's what creates the trauma bond. So it is like a drug. It's like an addiction. You are addicted to getting that back because it makes you feel good. And so you stick around hoping and waiting and wishing and praying for that to happen. I hope today they treat me well. I hope today they say they love me or show me they love me. And when they do show love and support, and that could be a manipulation, but maybe not, but when they do show it, it feels pretty good. because you're not used to it and you need it, or you want it, but you also need it. You need to feel loved and worthy. And this is why when you're in an abusive relationship, when you don't feel those things and then suddenly you do, you can feel stuck because you think you can't get this from anyone else. You can't get this from outside the relationship. And you can't get it from yourself because the other person has made you feel so bad about yourself and made you feel so unworthy and so unlovable that they know you're going to feel like you can't go anywhere else to get love and respect and feelings of importance and worthiness. They know how to trickle it into your life. People like that, sociopaths, narcissists, manipulative people, controlling people, emotionally abusive people. They know how to trickle it in. I know some of them, not all of them are like this, but the people that I'm talking about, they know how to trickle in just enough to keep you attached. And so that emotional attachment forms, and that's the trauma bond. Anyway, the point is that if that's the case in this person's story, that the husband feels trauma bonded, then you will not necessarily be able to get through to him. You will not be able to get through, especially with what you may believe are healthy, common approaches. Like a healthy, common approach is to ask someone, are you happy? That might be a healthy, not so benign question because it's going to elicit a response. But you want to know that. Are you happy in this relationship? Now, you can ask that question out of the blue, or you can interject it in another part of the conversation, but that's a valid question. Hey, are you happy in the relationship? How is she treating you? How are you doing? Just regular, general, overall questions. Now, the person who wrote may not be able to say those things because he may have already expended a lot of energy saying, look what she's doing to you. She's lying to me. She's lying to you. She's isolating you from friends and family, and she's doing this and she's doing that. And here's the problem with that. Those are not filling their cup, so to speak. So the victim in an abusive situation like this, boy, they need their cup filled. And what may end up happening is that you push them away instead of pulling them closer or having them listen to you, because they may not want to listen to that because they've spent a long time. I'm going to guess this is what might be happening. People like this may have spent a long time defending the person they've chosen to be in their life for many reasons, again, but maybe for the reason that when that abusive person provides, when they provide replenishing words and replenishing actions, the victim feels uplifted. And because they're waiting for that next uplift, or whatever you want to call it, replenishment, what ends up happening is the victim knows that the person abusing them is capable of, quote, good behavior. And they see another person that other people can't see. You don't know her like I do, he might say. You don't know her like I do. You don't know what she does for me. And of course, the abuser has a way of manipulating things to make it look like they're doing everything, or they're always the righteous one and the good one, and the other person, the victim, is the one doing the problem. So the victim feels like they are a problem because they're manipulated into feeling that way. So the victim is going to feel like they might have to defend the person that they're with, not only for the reason that they know that there's a better, nicer person underneath that nobody else can see, that's their perception, but also because of three reasons. One, they've made a commitment. As an adult, they've made a commitment, and gosh darn it, they're going to try as hard as they can to make this work. Some people do that. Some people will continue trying harder and harder and continually trying to please the person that they're with, no matter how hard they are to please. No matter how much they do, no matter how much they give up, no matter how much time and energy and effort they put into pleasing the other person, who is probably always unpleasable or never pleasable, no matter what they do, they can't be pleased. But because the victim of abuse is almost always a kind, generous, caring, supportive person, they're going to try harder. They're going to be compassionate for the other person, seeing the abuser's hurt, the abuser's pain, the abuser's history of maybe abuse to them or neglect or whatever it is. The kind, caring, supportive, generous, compassionate person is going to see all the good. And so it is very difficult for that kind of person to only look at the bad, to be the pessimist about the relationship, because they want to see the good in people. And that's a great quality to have. But some people take advantage of that. Some people take advantage of other people who only see the good. And when that happens, this kind of relationship can form. So that's one thing. They commit to this and they know that if they just try harder, it'll get better. But the trend shows that it never does. So that's one thing that happens. The second reason they might defend what they have is to get those feelings of worth and love again. When you've gone a while without feeling worthy of being loved by the person who's supposed to love you and support you the most, and you've been convinced that you can't get these feelings anywhere else, the abuser can actually become the victim's supply. What I mean by that is, essentially, it's creating a codependence on each other. The abuser feels energized when they drain the victim, and the victim feels loved when the abuser gives them like a sip of water in the desert. It's that replenishment. And so that is a formation of a codependence where they are both dependent on each other, and it's a very unhealthy situation, obviously. Very toxic situation in this case, for sure. Now, the number three reason the victim might defend their relationship, defend the abuser, is that the abuser prepares the victim for the resistance of others and makes them think that anyone who resists the relationship is out to sabotage them. These aren't the only three, but this is the small list I'm working with today. But what it means is that manipulative people tend to predict the response. I gotta make sure I say this right. They predict the response of a healthy or non-manipulative person, and use that response to manipulate their victim and others. For example, the manipulative person who is trying to isolate their partner or someone in their life knows that they will receive resistance from that person's friends and family. So to prepare for that, they'll tell the person they're manipulating to expect exactly that from those people, to expect resistance from those people. Like, if your friend tells you that it's a bad relationship, they're just out to sabotage you. They're just out to sabotage us. They don't know what we have. And so what ends up happening is the abuser can prepare, or what I like to call prime. It's kind of like you're priming somebody for the response that you expect in order for them to react to that response when they hear it or when they experience it. So if the response is resistance and the abuser told the victim ahead of time to expect resistance, then they see the abuser as right. They see the abuser as the person with the truth. And so it puts more credibility in the abuser's hands. And so the victim then sees that if they're right about that, then they must be right about maybe everything else or a lot of things. And so they have this control over them because the abuser predicts a healthy person's response and then tells the victim to expect that response from other people. So that when a quote healthy, or at least non-manipulative person talks to the victim in an abusive relationship, the victim's going to say, oh, this is exactly what my partner or what that manipulator, they're not going to say manipulator, but what that person said that I should expect. And now that I know it's happening, there's more credibility in what they're saying. It's a little challenging to describe it, but I think you understand what I mean. But the whole point about this is that the manipulator knows how to alter reality, you know, gaslighting. They know how to alter the victim's reality so that the victim doesn't know what's real. And the only way to help them determine what's real is that the manipulative person, the abuser, creates the reality. And that's the reality they want them to see. So all of this, everything I'm talking about now has to do with this person who wrote. And I wanted to maybe convey why somebody might stay in a manipulative relationship and why your methods or your pleas to get them to leave somebody that's unhealthy for them or toxic for them might not work. And if they are in this type of situation where they are being fed lies and confusion and being gaslit, all these manipulative behaviors can isolate someone, isolate them from family and friends to the point where all of their reliance on reality and friendship and love and connection comes from a very toxic person. So if you know anybody who's the victim of a manipulative or abusive relationship and you wonder why they aren't leaving, what I talked about today could be some of the reasons. I mean, there are many reasons. Sometimes people can't afford to leave. Sometimes there are kids and commitments and other things. But in this person's case, the person who wrote, that is one thing to consider, the reasons I gave. So now let me answer this person's question. This person wrote, how do I make it clear that I have no interest in her games, but I will maintain my relationship with him, the husband, and his family? I will answer this in parts. The first part is, how do I make it clear that I have no interest in her games? All you can do is say, no, thank you. All you can do is say, I don't want to be involved. All you can do is just express your boundary and move on. And that's not a good answer. I know, because the manipulator wants you to have a reaction, and they're going to push your buttons, and they're going to say anything it takes to push those buttons and push those buttons even deeper until you give them the response that they want or you do what they want. But my advice, a small piece of advice I'm going to give you, is to stoically express your boundary. Say no. Say, I don't want anything to do with that. Say whatever your boundary is, express it, but do it, and this is the only way I can explain it, in a stoic manner. No, thank you. Because what I'm doing is taking out the emotion. This is something that victims of emotional abuse are told after they leave abusive relationships, is when the abuser tries to reach out and trigger them, they're doing so to generate an emotional reaction. Because once they get that emotional reaction, they can use that emotional reaction as a means to create the next manipulation or come back at them and exploit that emotion in some way. But that's why it's called emotional abuse. They're abusing your emotions. And if you don't have any, if you are what's called gray rock, and you are just a dull gray rock, not giving out any emotional energy, not showing them your emotional state, not changing the inflection in your voice, and you just say, no, thank you. Just say, no, thank you. Just say, no, I don't want anything to do with that. And then when they push and they push and they push, sorry, no. Sorry, no. No. You don't have to say sorry. No. That's your boundary. And I know what this person might be thinking, the person who wrote, that doesn't work. That doesn't work with this person because they still do what they do. And it's true. No matter what you say, the manipulative person is going to do what they do. They're going to try to get what they want, regardless of what you want. They're going to try to get what they want, regardless of how you feel. They don't care. I mean, some of them don't care. Some of them do. That's why some of them aren't narcissists and have antisocial personality disorder. That's why some of them can change. That's why I have the Healed Being Program, because I know some of them can change. A lot of them can change, actually. Most of them can change. But if they're diagnosable, it's a little more challenging. But my goal here is to give you some steps to help yourself and help maybe your friend in this situation. So the next step I would consider in this person's case is that however you've been responding to your friend needs to change. However you've been doing it, it needs to change. It needs to be different than it has been. So if you've been responding like, why do you keep listening to her? Don't you know she is lying? Here's proof that she's lying. Why do you keep going in that direction when she's clearly manipulating you? I mean, if you're talking like that and he's having no part of it and he doesn't think you're telling the truth or something else, if he's not responding the way you want, then the way you're approaching him isn't the right way. And this is where the next step comes in, which is what I said earlier, filling his cup. How do you fill someone's cup? You know, emotionally speaking, you tell them you deserve to be treated with respect and kindness. You deserve to be loved, and you deserve to be supported, and you have every right to talk to your friends, and you have this and you have that. Now, that doesn't mean you're trying to turn them against the other person. You want to try to avoid that, because if you show resistance, what do? You meet the abuser's expectation, and their expectation has already been drilled into their victim. If any of your friends or family comes up and says this, then they're trying to sabotage us. Now, I'm making some wild assumptions here that may not be happening in this case, but it's a good rule of thumb. Because if you have been trying to get a victim out of an abusive relationship, then telling them to get out, you need to get out, it's dangerous, get out. If that doesn't work, then you need to take a different approach. And that different approach is to remind them how worthy they are, how lovable they are, and that they have, I don't like to use this word, but they have a right to do some of the things that they're being prevented from doing. You have a right to see your friends. You have a right to do all that stuff. That fills their cup. It doesn't take away from their commitments and their decisions. It doesn't tell them that they are wrong, meaning you might say, you're in this relationship and it's terrible for you. That kind of tells them that they're wrong. That kind of tells them that the decisions you make are terrible. The decision you made to be in this relationship is bad. And that's very hard for someone who's already been beaten up in their self-esteem and self-worth. Very hard for someone to hear that. And that is the opposite of filling their cup. So I like to take the approach of filling their cup. How can I fill this person's cup? Hey, you know, you deserve to be treated this way. You deserve this, this, and this. Without saying they're not doing it for you. You don't want to ride the resistance train. You don't want to show them that you resist what decisions they've made for themselves. You want to support them. Hey, you know, you can even say, I support the decision you make. If you want to stay with this person, I support that. And just know, I'm here for you. Just know that if you need me for anything, anytime, I'm here for you. Don't try to tell them what to do. Don't try to tell them how to think. They already get enough of that at home. All they're trying to do is figure things out and get through the confusion and reflect on what they're doing wrong. And there's a lot of processing they have to do. And the less you give them to think about and the more support you give them, the more they feel like they can come to you anytime without you telling them they're in a bad relationship or whatever, the more they feel like they can share things with you, the more likely they will. And the more likely they will be able to make decisions that are more healthy for them. Because you have the abuser that says, you're doing it wrong. And then you have a friend that says, you're doing this wrong. You can see how the opposition kind of hits them from both sides. The resistance kind of hits them from both sides. The difference is the abuser has more control and the outsider does not, because the abuser has conditioned that person to be controlled. So they feel very stuck. A lot of them feel very stuck in this situation. So what we're doing is we're opening up a door for the victim of this kind of behavior to feel safe to share with you anything they feel like sharing without judgment, without your judgment, without, I hate to say it, your righteousness, because you may feel that you're right and maybe you are 100%, but that isn't the level they're at. The victim of abuse is often not at the level that they can look at someone else and ask, what do you think I should do? They're not usually at that place because of all this other stuff going on. If they are, then great. You're already halfway there. But if they're not, then they may not be open to any kind of advice, just like this person wrote. They said that this husband refuses to acknowledge the damage that has been done, all the damage that his wife has done to him. And so that tells you where he is. He might be in denial, or he might be in a place where he's scared or whatever. Wherever he is, he needs to be. That is where he needs to be. And that doesn't sound right. He doesn't need to be there, but that's where he's most comfortable, even if he's uncomfortable. That's where he is functioning right now. And because he's functioning there, we have to meet them in their world. We have to meet them where they are. And when we meet somebody where they are, they might walk with us going our way, but we allow them to walk their way. So they can walk with us or they can walk without us. But when we meet somebody where they are and don't try to resist it and don't try to oppose and don't try to tell them anything that you want them to do, you just support them, even if they're making some terrible decisions, you support them and say, I support whatever decision that you want to make because why? Because I trust you. And when you introduce trust, that also fills their cup. It also reminds them that they are trustworthy. And for them to know they have somebody in their life that finds them trustworthy goes a long way. When you have somebody in your life that says, I trust the decisions that you're making, a person who knows that somebody else trusts them and supports the decisions they make, for maybe the first time, they may reflect on the decisions they are making and make a different decision. And this is all part of the process of supporting somebody where they are, even when you disagree with it, which is kind of along the lines of my definition of love. Love is supporting someone's path to happiness and the decisions they make to get there. And when they make decisions that we may disagree with, supporting them, even making those decisions, even though it's hard, is how we show love. And if we can show love to somebody and let them know that there is always love over here, then they can reflect on the decisions that they're making today and choose whether to go in our direction or theirs. And that means that they can choose what they want for their life, or they can choose to ask you for advice or continue to go their own way. But what ends up happening is when you stop resisting someone's decisions or stop telling them what to do or telling them what's wrong with their life or what's wrong with their relationships, when you stop doing that, they get out of defensive mode. They stop resisting you. And when you're not resisting, you have the mental capacity and the mental energy to focus on what you need to do in your life. It's sort of like when my partner Asha might say something about maybe a business decision that I made or want to make. And so I say, I'm going to do this business decision. It might cost some money. And she might say, that's a really bad idea. You shouldn't spend your money on that. We don't really have these kind of conversations anymore. We used to, but it has happened where she'll say, no, that's a bad idea. And then my resistance kicks in because I'm thinking, what do you mean it's a bad idea? I've done all the research and I've done all the prerequisite steps to take to get to the point where this will be a good business decision. And then she'll give me all the reasons why it won't be. And then I'll just feel this resistance pop up and I don't know what to do with it. And she makes good arguments, but damn it, I'm making my decision. This is what I want to do. And then we'll stop talking about it for a while. And then she won't bring it up anymore because I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. And she says, okay, fine, you know, whatever. So I am now sitting alone with it. Now, when I'm sitting alone with it and she's no longer bringing it up because we have a good relationship and good communication, if I say this is what I'm going to do, she says, okay, I'll back off. That's great. Thank you. And when she backs off, I'm no longer resisting. So I'm not spending any energy, any mental energy in a defensive posture. I'm not spending any mental energy trying to come up with reasons I know this will work. And that takes a lot of brain power. It does for me. It takes up a lot of brain matter to come up with the reasons you're going to do something and staying in that defensive state, knowing that you're right. When you're no longer in that resistant state, you have time to think without the influence of somebody else. You have time to sit with it in your own mind without anyone giving you any grief, without anyone telling you what to do or what not to do. And then you can go through the mental gymnastics that you have to go through inside your own head while you're alone. That's reflection time. That's when you can process. And I would say more than half the time she's probably right. So I will make a decision and she'll say, well, that's not a good idea. And this is why. I've been in business 20 years and this is why it's not going to work. And then I'll think about it. And you know, after I have these resistant feelings and thoughts and I have this defensiveness going on, I'm going to now sit with it. And when I sit with it, I have new thoughts and I have new ideas and new understandings and clarity because, yeah, her words are sinking in. But at the same time, I know that she's not going to be resistant toward me anymore. So I don't have to spend any more time coming up with excuses or reasons or whatever. I'm allowed to sit with myself and reflect. And during that reflection, during that processing time, I can come up with a better solution, typically. I'll come up with a better solution, or I'll can the idea altogether. I remember one particular business decision I was going to make that was going to take up a lot of my time. And she said, "What are you, crazy? Why would you do that? It took up so much time the last time you did that. Why would you do that? You barely have any time for what you're doing now." And I said, "Well, I know what I'm doing," or something like that. And then sitting with it and reflecting on it and having her not tell me what to do or what to think or how to do my job or whatever, I just sat with it. And because I had the opportunity to sit with it and reflect, there was a different thought about it. And she was right. She was absolutely right. And that changed my mind. So my point is here is that when you stop resisting and showing resistance to somebody, they are allowed to come up with the solutions themselves. To this person who wrote, if you say, "Hey, you know, I support anything, any decision that you make, I'm here for you," then what's going to happen is they may start sharing, like I said, they may start sharing things with you because they believe you're not going to fight or resist what they say. You're just going to listen. And, you know, some people are wired, and this also happens from abusive conditioning. Some people are wired to respond to resistance in the opposite way you want them to. So when you tell them you shouldn't do that, it's bad for you, or you'll be harmed, they may respond to that in the opposite way. "Well, I don't care what you say. I'm going to do this because, you know, I'm an adult and I can make decisions," whatever they say. And so you actually may push them further away from a good solution, or what you believe is a good solution. I'm a firm believer that given enough time and given enough reflection, somebody is going to come up with their own solution. They're going to see what harms them in life, and they're going to analyze the direction they're going and come up with the solution themselves. So keeping that resistance away from a person that you want to make a decision and supporting their path will allow them to be more open to sharing things with you and maybe even making decisions that are right for them, that are healthy for them, that put them in a direction that works instead of a direction that continues to cause them problems. Now, that's another thing, is that when you stop resisting and you stop telling them what to do and you stop doing anything you can to get them out of a situation that they are probably committed to for now, the emotional train that they've been on can start to slow down. And I see that as a new direction. They can start to slow down that train and change tracks and go in a different direction. But that almost always has to come from within. I mean, it does. It always has to come from within. But they have to come to that place themselves, inside themselves. If they do, the best decisions that one can make is one that is self-generated. So when you convince somebody to do something and they finally decide to do it, it doesn't have the same impact as someone realizing in themselves that they need to do this no matter what. It's like the breaking point I talk about with victims of abuse. They reach a breaking point where they say, "No more. I will not take any more. I will not tolerate any more. I'm leaving." When they reach that breaking point, there's no turning back. That is when they break, unfortunately. But that's what sometimes has to happen. They have to reach a breaking point to take control of their life. And when somebody reaches that point, you can't stop them. They are all in. There's nothing stopping them. The train is now going downhill at full speed, and nothing is going to stop that train. And they are done. They're done tolerating whatever was going on. And that can happen when they have somebody filling their cup and supporting them and letting them know, hey, you can come to me anytime you need me. Call me anytime, day or night. When somebody knows they have that lifeline, they are more willing to reflect on their life. That's really the bottom line, because some people are so resistant to other people's resistance that they don't even have the mental energy or mental capacity to reflect on their life and start to even consider making different choices. And so finally, to the person who wrote and asked this question, how do I make it clear that I have no interest in her games, but will maintain my relationship with him and his family? You don't have to tell her anything, I'm thinking. I mean, do you? Do you have to tell her anything? Like, one of the things that comes to mind when I read this is that your friend is a package deal. Yes, she comes with the package, and this sounds like a very unfortunate situation, but your friend, the husband, is part of this package, and he is choosing to be with this person, or he feels like he has to choose to be with this person. And because of that, accepting him means accepting his choices. And that may be the hardest thing to do, but this is right along the same line that we were talking about. Accepting him means accepting his choices, means I support whatever decision that you want to make. I'm here if you need me. And this will be a continuing issue for you and for him, sounds like. So what's going to happen is that you're going to have to deal with the baggage that comes with this package. What baggage is he bringing is going to be his choice. It's like being in a relationship with somebody whose mom you can't stand. But they love their mom and they talk to their mom all the time and the mom wants to come over and spend time with them. But it's somebody you can't stand and you never get along. So what do? Do you get rid of the person that you're with because you can't stand their mom? Or do you stay with that person because there's so many great qualities about that person and you'll just have to deal with the fact that they like their mom and you don't? That's just something that you have to accept in yourself. Do I want to deal with this baggage? Because what is happening here is that you have a friend that has chosen somebody to be in his life or feels like he has no choice to be with this person in his life, and you have a choice. And this may not sound fair, but you have a choice to choose to accept him and whatever baggage he comes with or not. Again, this is probably very unfair, and there's probably aspects of this situation I'm not fully aware of, but this is very similar to being in a relationship with somebody who you can't stand their mom, but the mom is part of the package. So is the relationship good enough, and does it fulfill you enough so that you're okay with the mom in the picture? Even though you may not be okay with the mom in the picture, but can you be okay enough because everything else is great about the relationship you're in with the person that you're with? So can you be okay with this friend being in this relationship that you disapprove of, knowing there will be difficulties, knowing that you'll have to deal with her lies and her deception and her manipulation, knowing all of that because the friendship is so good that you want to keep it and you don't want to lock him out? Because this is what we do in life. When you buy a used car, you might notice the thing knocks or ticks or something like that. But because it's so old, we just have to deal with it. But the rest of the car gets us to work and is comfortable and it has all these amazing benefits for us. But that darn tick, or that darn ticking. So do we get rid of the car or do we deal with the tick? Now, I know it's not exactly the same thing, but that's the baggage. Do we deal with the baggage? Do you want to deal with the baggage? And I'm not saying that you should just eliminate the friendship either. I'm just saying that if you're going to have the friendship, you kind of have to accept what comes with it. Even though, yes, it's toxic, it's unhealthy. You know it and many other people know it. All the outsiders or a lot of outsiders can see what's happening here. But what can you do? You can't really do anything to change his mind because it's clear that you've tried and it doesn't work. So you step back, tell him you'll support him no matter what, and you're always there for him. And that doesn't mean you walk away. It just means you find the time to be with him when you can and have quality time together. And when you can't because she interferes, then You just step back. And that might mean saying, hey, looks like you have some things to deal with, so I'm going to step out of it. And I wish you the best. Good luck. And then call me when you're done dealing with that, because I'd love to get together again. That's what friends do. They realize that their friends have other things going on in their life, and those friends have to deal with their issues and then come back to the friendship. And hopefully you'll have a quality time together and you can enjoy it. And then, of course, not showing any resistance allows them to open up and share things with you. I mean, I remember a long time ago when I used to talk to my mom and say, why don't you leave that guy? You know, my stepfather, why don't you leave him? He's so abusive. He's so hurtful. I didn't even use those words. I just said, you hate him. You tell me you hate him. Why don't you leave him? And so every time I brought up the subject, she didn't want to talk about it. She did not want to talk about it. So we never did. And so one day I decided, that's it. I'm not going to bring it up anymore. I'm talking to myself. I'm not going to bring this up anymore. She clearly isn't going to leave. That was my decision. She's not going to leave. So I just shut up. I just stopped mentioning it. And what happened? Exactly what you think happened. She started opening up. He did this. He did that. And I listened. And when I listened and the stories got worse, I didn't say, you should leave him. What's going on? What's your problem? I just said, oh, you know, wow, I'm so sorry. I can't believe that happened. Are you serious? How are you? How do you feel? Do you need help? Asking questions. That's my last piece of advice. Ask questions. Questions allow people to dive in without feeling judged. Now, you can't ask judgmental questions like, why are you tolerating that? That's not necessarily what I'm talking about. I'm talking about questions that you'd ask a friend if you didn't necessarily know what was going on with them. How are you? Do you need any help? Do you want to talk about it? I'm here if you need me. This is just the generic stuff that we would ask a friend. I mean, not generic, but it's meaningful. It's meaningful, simple questions. But we're not trying to lead them into believing that we're, you know, want to get them away from the person they're with. We just want to allow them to connect with themselves, to share their reflections on what's going on or share what they are going through, because that allows them some relief from any pressure that's built up. Now, I'm not talking about, let me just add this, I'm not talking about someone who's always in the drama, always playing the victim, and never wants to do anything about it. There are people that are always in that space, like, oh, I don't know what to do. There's nothing I can do. And then no matter what you say to them, oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. There's nothing I can do. But they want to share what's going on in their life, mainly because they want to vent to you, but never actually change what's going on in their life. I'm not talking about that. I call those people dramatic victims. And typically dramatic victims don't want to change. I'm not talking about real victims. I'm talking about people who seem to desire the drama. They seem to want the attention that they get when they share what drama they're going through in their life. And again, I have to be careful about that because some people have genuine gripes. They are genuinely suffering, and I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the people who share that the same things are happening all the time, and they keep repeating those same things. It's sort of like, my boss keeps yelling at me. He keeps yelling at me. Oh, he yelled at me today. And then the next day, he yelled at me again. And, oh, it's just awful. It's just awful. And he yelled at me again. And it's just like always the same story. And when you're sharing always the same story without necessarily desiring a solution, I mean, you can always tell when they're not desiring a solution because they're not saying, what should I do? This is how you can tell a dramatic victim from a genuine victim. And I'm not saying that all dramatic victims aren't genuine, but a lot of them, they like to tell the same story over and over again for the attention or whatever. And they don't really want an answer. They don't want guidance. They don't want direction. They won't ask, what should I do? Or what do you think I should do? What have you done? Has that ever happened to you? They're not looking for that answer. They're just looking to share it. They're just looking to express it. And I've been trying to avoid this word, they're looking to complain. I don't really want to say they're complaining. They're just being dramatic, and I think some of them like the attention. So I'm going to ease off of that subject, get away from that subject, and come back and close this up and let this person know, thank you for writing this and sharing this. I don't know the entire situation, but that is how I would approach this person. Let them know that you're a safe person to share with, that you're not trying to convince them to do anything. And also let the abuser know in a very stoic, very unemotional way what your boundaries are. This is my boundary, and I'm not going to go any further. And I won't allow that into my life. And then when they push and push and push, you back off and walk away. And stay disconnected, stay gray rock, because what they're doing is looking for that emotional response. And if they sense it, they're going to use it against you. And that's when it usually goes downhill from there. I hope this is enough. I hope I've given you enough to work with, enough to think about. And I wish you the best with this. Thanks for writing in. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons of the week. They are the following: Anna, Adriana, Sandra, Christy, Lisa, Holly, Deborah, Tammy. Love you guys. I'm glad you are supporting the show. Thank you so much. I am very grateful for your support. And I'm always grateful that you give. And thank you for your support. And if you find value in the show like these patrons do, head over to More TOB and you have options to give back as well. And for a show on how to navigate the difficult relationship, head over to my other podcast called Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship and you want to try to do your best to save the relationship and save yourself, head over to healedbeing.com. There's a comprehensive program that can help you stop hurting the people you care about. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I just want to say one thing to one person out there. Well, actually, probably many people out there, unfortunately, that might need to hear this. This person wrote, and I'm just going to read you one sentence they wrote in part of a longer email. They wrote, "I've broken down crying, and he tells me I'm being ridiculous and stupid or acting like a child." I want you to think about, what would you say to this person? Would you tell them, well, were you acting like a child? Or do you do this all the time? Or would you ask a question like, why would he do that? What would you say to that person? I'll tell you what I'm going to say. I would say this, and I'm not going to tell you that I'm 100% right, and this should be the way that it always goes, but yeah, I am. Yes, I am going to tell you that I'm 100% right in what I'm about to say. When you cry in front of somebody, when you are down, when you are miserable, when you are sad, in front of somebody who claims to love you, who says they love you, who is committed to you, you know, talking about a romantic relationship or even family, anyone that claims to care about you, that says, you're being ridiculous or stupid or acting like a child, is abusive. That is abuse. You may call it something else, but I call it abuse. That is an abusive thing to say to somebody that you're supposed to love. Because think about this. Think about somebody that you care about. If is an abusive person in your life, don't think about that person. Think about somebody you really love and you have a good relationship with. And they start crying. And they're really hurt. They're really sad. What would you tell them? Would you tell them, you're being ridiculous? Don't be a child. You're so stupid. Doesn't that just hit you the wrong way? Doesn't that feel awful? To think that you would tell somebody that you love, who is crying, who's suffering, those words? That's why I say, I'm 100% sure that's abuse. Somebody might say, well, what if they're crying because they said I did something I didn't do? It's still abuse. You know why? Because you have a conversation about it. You don't put somebody down. You don't insult them. You don't make them feel like they are something on the bottom of your shoe. You actually have sympathy at least, and empathy at most. You show them that you love them by telling them I'm so sorry you feel that way. What can I do? I mean, or whatever you want to say, but it's a sympathetic response. It's compassion. And I know people listening to this show right now, of course that's who you are. You wouldn't listen this long if that wasn't you, or if it wasn't in you somewhere. Maybe you're working on this, but this is the kind of response we give to somebody we love. Anybody who says you're being ridiculous when you're showing clear suffering, when you are crying, when you are down, and they're just putting you down while you're down, that's abuse. You know, it's emotional abuse. It's not physical abuse, but it is abusive, and it's important to know that. Don't get into that space of, oh, maybe I did something wrong, because if you saw somebody you loved crying, how would you respond? Would you be compassionate, or would you put your proverbial foot on their head and push it down even further? That's just not something I could ever see doing to people I love. If I saw my partner crying, wow, that would hit me. Oh, what can I do? I mean, when she cries, I already cry anyway. It's like this connection we have. As soon as she's crying, I mean, we'll watch a movie and I'll be starting to cry and I'll think, why am I crying? I'm not even sad about this part. And I'll look over and she's crying. And that tells me, oh, okay, you're crying, so I'm crying. Oh, I understand now. I don't know what that is, some sort of connection, but that's what happens. And I think that happens with people who are, I guess, empathetically connected. When you are connected at a deeper level, you're going to feel their emotions. You're going to feel where they are, and you're going to be hurt when they're hurt. You're going to be sad when they're sad, and you're going to come through when they need you. And when they need you is when they're down. And when somebody you love is down, what do you want to do? You want to be there for them. You want to see them up. You want to see them happy. And they may not be able to get happy right away, but just like I said earlier, just let them know, hey, I'm here. I'm here if you want to share anything. Let's talk. Even if it's about you. Even if they're sad because of something you said or did, it's important to remember that the people we love still have feelings. They still have emotions that we all have. And again, I'm not talking to the majority of people that listen to this show. I'm just talking to anyone that might need to hear this, because sometimes we might think that they're just being dramatic, you know, talking about the dramatic victim, but it's still real to them. It's still real to the people we love. And so we want to do our best to lift them up. And again, the only reason I'm talking about this is because of that email where she wrote, I've broken down crying and he tells me I'm being ridiculous and stupid or acting like a child. I don't even have to read the rest of the email. I just know the situation she's in. Because if he's going to push her down and grind her head in the dirt even more while she's down, then she's dealing with a whole lot more. And sometimes all you need to do is read one little sentence or hear one little thing they say and know that there's an entire bucket of things going on that you don't even need to hear about to understand that they are in a very difficult or even abusive situation. And as a reminder to those in any kind of abusive or difficult relationship, if you have a laundry list of all the infractions that somebody is committing in the relationship, do you need that laundry list? I mean, think about one thing, one item on that list. And wouldn't that be enough to let you know that you are in a very unhealthy situation? I get laundry lists in these emails. This is happening. This is happening. Even this email that came today, there are just numerous behaviors that happen in some relationships that all you have to do is tell me one of those behaviors. And I would say, oh, that's an unhealthy relationship. Or that's an unhealthy behavior. It needs to change. It needs to stop. And then I'll get an email with 10, 20, 30 more things on it. Like the Mean Workbook that I have. The Mean Workbook has 200 items on it that some people have checked up to 180, 190 items. And all of these are describing emotional abuse. It's over at loveandabuse.com. But the checklist, the assessment, the worksheet is very revealing. And when they see it all laid out in front of them, that's when I comment that isn't one of them enough to say this needs to change or else? And I know there are some situations where you can't talk like that. Maybe it's dangerous, and that's a different topic for another day. But certainly, it is an awareness exercise. It is a discovery exercise to list all the things that are very difficult or even abusive in the relationship and ask yourself, isn't one enough? And then you have to look at the rest and say, and I'm dealing with all of these. How is this not enough for me to say I will no longer tolerate this kind of behavior? I will no longer tolerate this in my life. I am worth more. I am lovable. I am worthy. I deserve respect and kindness. And if you're not getting it, remind yourself that you deserve it. And then sit with that. Because what you need to do next will come. You will know when it's time. If you're in that situation, you'll know when it's time to make the next best decision for you. That could be a deep, meaningful conversation, very hard conversation with the person, or it could mean taking another step, taking a bigger step. I'm not here to tell you which step to take. I'm just here to remind you that it's okay to contemplate every direction and allow those thoughts to come into your mind so that you can choose what's best for you. And if you're not sure what's best for you, I do have episodes on decision making. But also, keep an open mind, because that's how you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.